You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom, first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. This is the Monday edition, and I believe most of you by now know that the former President of the United States, George H.W. Bush, passed away late Friday evening in Houston, Texas, where his home's at. And today, the nation is mourning, and Air Force One, the President's plane, was used to transport the family of the deceased. His son lives in Dallas, and some of the family lives in Texas, and they flew from the Houston area to Washington, D.C., landed at Joint Base Andrews, formerly Andrews Air Force Base. And I have a picture of that. I thought that was an outstanding picture. And we're going to learn more, and tributes are coming in. I think now's not the time to talk politics. I notice in researching this show that there's still a lot of, how should I say this, ill will on many on right and the left towards George Bush. Now, I can remember when, I call him Papa Bush, when his popularity was over 90%, and that was after the invasion of Iraq. And remember, he stopped short of going in. I think that was a mistake on his part, but because we had to go back. But be that as it may, why did he lose again not too long thereafter to Bill Clinton? It's very important to politicians, and they know this. If you're going to make promises to the people, you better keep them, or at least try to keep them. Because if the American people, and it doesn't matter if you're Democrat, Republican, liberal, conservative, people will take you at your word. And when they feel that you've broken an important campaign promise, they feel betrayed. And that is why Bill Clinton won. Now, Bill Clinton doesn't see it that way. You see, at that time, I was still a Republican. I left the Republican Party in 2006. I gave up on them. I said, how many moderate liberal Republicans, we keep nominating them, many of them get defeated, and even the ones that get elected don't deliver on their campaign promises. And I've always been for limited government, for a representative republic under a constitution. And both political parties today are big government parties. And it's hard to tell the difference. Now, I'm not saying they're not differences, but the common denominator are they keep spending more and more of your money. They're beyond spending your money. They're spending future generations' money. And it's both in Democrat and Republican administrations. In other words, balanced budgets, fiscal responsibility, financial responsibility, however you want to term it, has gone out the window in terms of Washington, D.C. And because they're big spenders of your money, they are praising George Bush. Doesn't surprise me. He was always a moderate Republican, or what used to be called a Rockefeller Republican, part of the liberal establishment. And I was in a newsroom and someone was asking me, you know, most of the students don't seem to care about this. Now, that doesn't surprise me because most students don't care that much about politics, especially politicians that were in office many years before they were even born. Just think about it. A college freshman today was born in 2000. That's over 20 years, more than 20 years, since George H.W. Bush left office. But see, I have a long memory. I initially was for Barry Goldwater, and Barry Goldwater got trounced, defeated by Lyndon Baines Johnson. And the Republican Party said, never again, never again. So when Ronald Reagan ran for president, and he was running against one of his opponents was George Bush, I was definitely for Ronald Reagan. I was not for President Bush. I voted twice for Reagan, but I did vote for President Bush because I thought he was going to continue the policies of Ronald Reagan. Now, Ronald Reagan wasn't perfect, especially in the spending area. But given the Democratic Party's candidates, it made sense. And one thing that I remembered, and many people still remember to this day that voted for Bush, was the promise, read my lips, no new taxes. And they believed it. I believed it. That's why I voted for him. Now, I have great respect for the gentleman. Otherwise, I wouldn't have voted for him twice. And I voted for his son twice. But you see, you learn from experience. And many call them conservative Republicans, classical liberal Republicans, really got tired of supporting moderates that would lose. The American people want a choice, not an echo, as one Schlafly used to say. So for you students that were born many years after the Bush presidency, I wanted to explain that. I admired the man. I admired his dedication to service, to country. He cared about people. He respected loyalty. But you see, I always believe that loyalty is a two-way street. And what I mean by that, when you make promises and people vote for you and you don't deliver on those promises, I'm not saying every single one, but important ones. And I mean, the problem today, and this is why I'm discussing it, is out of control government spending. And again, look what happened when Republicans were in and Democrats were in. One of the reasons I left is I wasn't paying close attention when his son was president. I had other things on my mind. And that's the typical situation of most Americans. A, they're not interested in politics. Or if they're interested, it goes only for very short periods of time, usually right before an election. But when I looked at the deficit history under George W. Bush, the son, I finally woke up. And in 2006, I said, enough is enough. They're just as bad as the Democrats. And that's exactly what's going on now. President Trump, although he talks a good game, is running up massive deficits. There's no leadership on this in Washington in terms of the establishment parties, both Democrat and Republican. So while my condolences and sympathy for the family and friends of George Bush is real, I'm not going to support any Republicans anymore because they betrayed the American people time and time and time again, just as the Democrats have. At one time, Democrats were against the illegal alien invasion of this country. And it's not too long ago. Now they're more concerned about illegal aliens than they are about the American citizens. So you see, there's a problem in Washington. The people know it. You can't trust either political party. They will betray you at the drop of a hat. And they've done it repeatedly. I call them the political elitist establishment. And we're seeing what I think is a perfect example in this long farewell to George Bush. He's both a Democrat and Republican kind of guy, as are their sons. Big spenders. It's easy spending other people's money. But the deficits were run up, even in Reagan's term. And they've gotten worse and worse and worse. And now we are fast approaching a day of reckoning. And what I mean by that, our obligations, our unfunded liabilities are over $200 trillion and growing every single day. They're afraid to address it, but they know within 10, 20 years at most, but I'm not optimistic there. I think within 10 to maybe 15 years, it's going to hit the fan. It's hitting the fan already, but you can disguise it for a while. What I'm talking about is when you have obligations of over $200 trillion, remember, in a single year, the United States, for example, this year, I don't know the exact figure, but it'd be about $20 trillion. We're talking 10 times the entire gross domestic product of the United States. It didn't happen all overnight. It has taken over 70 years. Now, some would like to say it started much earlier, and it did, definitely under Hoover and Roosevelt. Hoover was a good example of a moderate Republican, a liberal Republican, and then he was followed by FDR. So the idea the traditional idea of balanced budgets was thrown away. Now, initially, you can get away with that. But you can't get away with it when you've been doing it for 70, 80 years, depending on where you want to have the start date. And are we talking about it? No. There are some that are, that know the extent of the problem. But leadership is sorely lacking in both political parties, and that's probably the biggest deficit in Washington, D.C. George Bush, in my mind, was an establishment figure. And yes, Richard Nixon, who appointed him both to U.S. ambassador and Ambassador China, is a good example of a liberal or progressive Republican, even though the left in this country can't stand him. And they succeeded in getting rid of him, forcing him to resign. So why I want to praise the character and the integrity of George Bush, you can't do that without mentioning why he was only a one-term president. He shouldn't have been a one-term president, especially when you're a wartime president with that type of popularity rating. Did it surprise me that Bill Clinton beat him? No. And remember, Ross Perot got in the race. Now, some try to blame Ross Perot for the loss. It wasn't Ross Perot that beat George Bush. It was George Bush that beat himself. And the problem with Ross Perot, he never wanted to be president. He got out, remember, he was leading. Many people forget this. Of the three candidates for president, Clinton, Bush, and Perot, at one time, before he got out, who was in the lead? Ross Perot. Many in Texas, as well as across the country, would have voted for Perot. But then he got out. And I know he got back. Even when he got back, he got nearly 20% of the vote. You see, if Ross Perot had stayed in, he would have been president, not Bill Clinton and not George Bush. Most people have forgotten that. And I'll tell you why. He was pointing out some of the problems, what I'm mentioning right now. It wasn't new, wasn't a genius to point it out, but he was a businessman like Trump and knows you can't have these massive deficits year in, year out, because eventually they come back to haunt you. Now, I want to play. I was looking for a short clip, and I think I found one, of Mike Pence, the vice president, who I definitely preferred over Trump. If Mike Pence were the Republican candidate for president in 2016, I would have voted for Mike Pence. Instead, I stayed home. I just want to make sure you know where I'm coming from. So Mike Pence gave a short, and I don't have the entire clip, nor would I play the entire clip, because it's just sheer time constraints. But the family was there, and the reason why, normally it's the President of the United States that would have made these comments, but you can see why, given the fact that Trump defeated Jeb Bush rather early on in terms of the race. You see, what you need to understand is Jeb Bush thought he was going to be the next president. He had the money. He had the backing of the party, the establishment wing of the party. And he thought he had the right position on immigration. Boy, was he wrong. And I never thought Jeb Bush would win it once Trump got in. I was a small minority. But I want to play what Mike Pence said today. And I wish I did have the whole clip. I would play it, but I don't. So here is a small excerpt from the remarks of Vice President Pence eulogizing President George H.W. Bush. This is in the Capitol Rotunda.
After a lifetime of writing letters, my son got one just not too long ago. As I told two of his sons this weekend, when our son made his first tailhook landing as a Marine aviator on the USS George Herbert Walker Bush, I took the liberty of writing the ship's namesake to ask for a small favor. I didn't write him as a vice president to a former president. I just wrote as a proud dad of a Marine aviator to a former Navy pilot. I asked him to sign a picture of the flight deck that I could give to my son. Now, we were told by the staff that the president had long since ended the practice of signing autographs. And we understood that. But little to my surprise, just in time for my son's winging, there came not only a signed photograph, but, of course, a letter, hand-signed as well, August 2018. In that letter, President Bush wrote to my son, in his words, "Congratulations on receiving your wings of gold. I know how proud you and your family are at this moment. And then in words that assured us that the letter came directly from him, he wrote, quote, "Though we have not met, I share the pride your father has for you during this momentous occasion, and I wish you many CAVU days ahead. All the best, G. Bush." I would come to learn that acronym, CAVU for short, is a term Navy pilots have used since World War II. It stands for Ceiling and Visibility Unlimited. President Bush described CAVU in his words as the kind of weather we Navy pilots wanted when we were to fly off our carrier in the Pacific. And he once wrote a letter to his children saying that CAVU, in his words, describes my own life as it's been over the years and as it is right now. Ceiling and visibility unlimited. You know, that may well describe the essence of this man. And it may well have been his vision. The vision he had for his life, for his children, his children's children, and his country. No barriers, no boundaries, no limits.
Now, that was Vice President Mike Pence today at the conclusion of his eulogy to President George H.W. Bush. And I'm sure the Bush family appreciated that. See, one of the things I really admired President Bush was the fact that he volunteered to serve in the Navy during World War II. Became the youngest pilot in the Navy when he got his wings. Flew over 50 missions, was shot down, and fortunately survived. But many people that volunteered never came home. In my mind, they're always the heroes, the real heroes. Oh, we had the draft in World War II, Korea, Vietnam. We don't have it today. Today we have a all-volunteer force, which I favor. And although there were many that volunteered for World War II, there were many more that were drafted into the service. So it was his service to his country when the country really needed it, when it was threatened, that I always admired. And yes, he did send letters. Now, I realize many of these letters he probably never saw. But veterans, especially of World War II, who died, and when George Bush was in office, received a letter from him honoring their service. I, too, received one when my father died, and George Bush was still president. Now, you might say that's good politics, but I think it's respecting the service of others. So the next couple of days on television, you'll see many hours devoted to various parts of these ceremonies. And there'll be fond remembrances of this man. A good, decent person. He meant well. But I remind you, good intentions are not enough. Results count. And the long-term consequences of government spending being out of control for various reasons ultimately will impact this country severely. We don't have much time because we've wasted years, decades, not addressing it, ignoring it. Deficits don't matter. In the short run, that's right. In the long run, absolutely not. Because there have been many countries that thought this way, that had to declare bankruptcy and start all over. We are fast becoming Greece. We have some years to go, but there's no sense of urgency and there's no leadership on it. But it will hit like a ton of bricks. And there's no one person to blame. You can't. Why, it's tempting to blame politicians. Remember, you voted for these people. I voted for these people. But since most Americans don't focus in on this, and the only time is during election time, primarily, politicians have been getting away with this year in, year out. It's still going on. Oh, it started with Hoover and Roosevelt, and Republican and Democrat. And now we have another Republican doing the same. Needs to be done is spending needs to be cut. It's not like it's hard to understand what needs to be done, but you need the courage and willingness to do it, the vision. And that's what's missing from both political parties. No sense of urgency, no understanding that you can't continue doing this. It ultimately leads to a day of reckoning where taxes have to be dramatically increased and benefits dramatically cut. And what happens? You're seeing what happens in France over the weekend. I'm going to be covering that a little bit later, where people are rioting and there are battles between the police and what they call the yellow vest movement. Initially, it was all about increased taxes, higher prices on gasoline. You see, they have an elite too, but the people are revolting, and this is what you'll get. In the United States, it will be far, far worse. Time is running out, and neither the Republican Party or the Democratic Party has a clue how to handle it. A better way to say it, they're not handling it. They're spending, spending, spending. The American people need two things from the government. One, the federal government needs to be downsized. And I do mean downsized, and I do mean real cuts. With departments being closed, federal departments, at least eight. Is anyone talking about that? Absolutely not. Oh, there's maybe one or two that'll say, well, we'll shut down the education department or the energy department. Well, that's a start. I wouldn't disagree. But after you finish closing eight departments, and it will happen, it should have happened long ago, then you need to cut the real, where the real money is, welfare programs and entitlement programs. That is not going to be popular. Big government, what I call the United States today, is a warfare and welfare state. And what's being pushed in terms of the younger generations today? Socialism. Where it's been tried, it's been an utter, complete failure. It leads to an authoritarian and totalitarian regime. It's not an answer. It's a disaster. And that's the best the left can do. But that's what they think is the answer. It isn't. They forget something very fundamental, that is the private sector, where jobs, wealth are created. And as you take more and more resources for government at all levels, not just the federal level, the state level, the county, city, school district level, there are fewer and fewer resources that can be used to create the wealth. So we need fundamental tax reform, get rid of any income tax-based system, return it to a consumption-based system. And I don't have time to get into that, but along the lines of the fair tax, or my version of it, fair tax less. But more importantly, what you got to do is limit government spending on the federal level, because neither political party is up to the job. They won't do the heavy lifting. And you can thank all the moderate Republicans and the liberal and now progressive Democrats. They forgot the fundamentals. They spent and spent and borrowed money. And that's why this year the deficit will be over $1,000 billion, over $1 trillion in just one year. So I salute President Bush. I never could vote for him, but I did. But once he betrayed, broke his promise, me and millions others said no, sat home, stayed home. And that, frankly, is the fate of any politician, no matter where they're at. When you tell the people one thing and do the opposite, especially when most people heard it, you shouldn't be surprised that you only had one term. He should have been a two-term president, but he wasn't. So I found these ceremonies very moving, inspirational, but I could not forget the history that unfortunately most young people today don't even know. They wouldn't even know what I'm talking about. And sad to say, most of them aren't paying that much attention. Now, President Trump had dinner with the Chinese president, Xi. I keep getting a half a dozen different pronunciations. And supposedly, it was a very good dinner. It lasted 3 hours. What do you think they talked? Trade. I said many, many, many shows ago, and no one is going to admit this, that you had to make a connection between what Trump is trying to do in the trade. He's trying to bring down our deficits. Good luck with that. But at least he's trying. Past presidents didn't really try. And to get the communist Chinese attention, he slapped tariffs on them. And they were going to go up to 25% come January. Why did he do that? What's the connection I'm talking about? Oh, yes, we want to have, over time, a more balanced trade relationship. But the reason why we have such large deficits is the fact that the Chinese have been forcing technology transfer, stealing intellectual property, dumping goods at below price production prices. I'm talking steel. They went in big time. See, most large nations, developed nations, have a steel industry. Communist Chinese targeted that. They wanted to dominate that. And until Trump came along, they were doing it, not only in the United States, but in Europe. So President Trump has got their attention. But you see, the Communist Chinese have a much bigger problem. They rely on exports to not only the United States and Europe, but other countries. And when you impose tariffs, what usually happens, and I've seen people make this mistake, I make the mistake until I point it out. Tariff is a tax. And if you put a tax on Chinese goods coming into the United States, who pays it? To the extent that they buy communist Chinese goods, the American taxpayer pays it. Keep that in mind. So I don't celebrate rising tariffs. But what the communist Chinese have done, because a lot of their industry is controlled, their government enterprises, is cut the price of the goods. There's a phrase, China price or Chinese price. They can do that. So it's not absolutely the case that the American people will end up paying the tax, because what some Chinese manufacturers can do is cut the price. So even with the tariff, it's lower and Americans will buy it. Now that's a detail, but an important detail to understand, because various commentators are making the point, well, let's not celebrate high tariffs, because who's paying those tariffs? The American people. And generally that is true, but you really need to look case by case. But to the extent that the United States pushes this and Chinese don't negotiate, you're going to have millions of unemployed Chinese laborers, workers. And that can lead to political instability. You don't want people rioting in the streets like you're having in Paris and some cities in France today. Over what? Higher gasoline prices. They call it petrol. It's gasoline. You cannot ignore the concerns, the legitimate concerns of the people, whether it's the American people, the French people, or the communist Chinese people. And any political leadership that does that, their days are numbered. Keep that in mind. So what's happening in France? You've probably seen on your news, to the extent they put it out, people in yellow vests. In France, if you drive a car, you have to have a yellow vest. And it makes sense, because if you're in an accident, especially at night, but even not at night, it calls attention to you, so you hopefully won't get run over by someone that can't see you. I'm not against it, but they're required to have it. So the people are using their yellow vests. Initially, this was all about increased gasoline prices. And it's supposedly the government saying, well, we need to meet our commitments, our climate change commitments. Now I'm laughing, because what's interesting about this is France gets most of its electrical power from nuclear power. And has a surplus and sells it to other nations. See, this is just another example, and it's worldwide, of government intervention into the private sector. What the private sector says, please leave us alone. So you're seeing police, French police, going after these people in the yellow vests, shooting tear gas into them, which is dangerous, but there's some videos. You can look at the videos, and you don't know what went prior to it. That's the one thing I caution. But you see police officers aiming these cartridges into the crowd. And if they hit someone, and yes, they're hitting people, they can injure them seriously. He can take out an eye or be seriously wounded. It's not pleasant, and the gas is definitely not pleasant. It's what's used for riot control. And this is the third weekend it's been going on, and it looks like it's going to continue into the next weekend. So the people in France, at least, are making it known to the government, we don't like what you're doing, and we're going to stand up to you. Even though the Prime Minister of France, I believe he's a Prime Minister, is the President of France? I know they have both. He's not going to back down. Well, we'll see. I've heard that from politicians before. I'm not on anyone's side, but I do understand that. See, the issue is you have many people that are low income, and many of them work in Paris. They can't afford to live in Paris, but they have to drive to Paris and back, and they can't afford these increases in taxes. And the elites, well off, they can. So this is a rather explosive situation. What's interesting, the ambulance drivers have joined join the Yellow Vest Movement. That's what they're calling it. So this can get out of control. It's by far the worst rioting since the 60s, 68 specifically. Where's it going to end? I don't know. I bring it out because don't think it can't happen. It cannot happen here. It can happen here, and it has. That same year in 68. Yes, the headlines were worst Paris riots in 50 years. I believe that. And it looks like the police simply cannot handle it, and they're calling for the military to be engaged in this. So stay tuned. I'll give you some additional information depending on what happens Friday, Saturday, Sunday of usually starts Friday evening and it goes into Saturday and Sunday. We'll learn a lot more. And I do have a lot of information. And let me say this before I forget it. The way you listen to the Pronk Pop Show is to go to my companion blog, which is pronkpops.wordpress.com. And if you go there, under my photograph, you'll see links to the most recent 60 to 80 shows. And usually I posted either that day or the following day, and I'm trying to get back into that because there have been some days, the last show being an example, that took me, because of other commitments, quite a while to get up, and I do apologize for that. So we're getting back to a normal situation. I give a show today. It's up, if not that day, next day for sure. But under that, under those links, you'll have not all, but a lot of my show prep, things that I've looked at in preparing the show. And I give that information because I want you to make up your own mind. And there's articles, there's YouTube videos, there are photographs, statistics, depending on the nature of the story. Now, there's one other, and I'm not going to spend much time on this, but there have been some news stories, and we're hearing this, and I don't know what to make of it. I'm of two minds. We've been hearing that the Mueller investigated, and the prosecutors are wrapping up, whatever that means. They're tying up loose ends. Well, it's about time because they've spent over $30 million and don't, in my mind, don't have much to show for it. What I mean, supposedly this investigation was to prove that Donald Trump was colluding with the Russians. They've come up with absolutely no evidence of that. You see, normally, and most people need to understand this, the FBI, most of the FBI investigations are criminal investigations where a crime has been committed, and you're investigating the crime to determine who's guilty. Not this. What you need to understand is the Mueller, quote, investigation started out as an intelligence investigation or counter-espionage. They go on for years. You see, to appoint a special counsel, and this is Department of Justice regulations, you got to specify the crime. And that wasn't done. Now, they went back and tried to fix that. What we don't have in this country, I say don't, what we shouldn't have in this country is the FBI or any police force not investigating crimes, but trying to find any crime that an individual has committed. That's what President Trump calls a witch hunt. And it is. We don't want that kind of nation. That's an authoritarian, totalitarian situation. And part of the problem is this special counsel, although ostensibly reports to the deputy attorney general, I frankly think, A, should never have been appointed. And if Trump had been smart, now I know some of you are going to say, well, he was. I would have shut it down immediately, and I would have fired the SOB that did this, and that's Rosenstein. You see, this was an effort by the elites, Democrat and Republican, to try to make sure that Trump didn't have a second term by trying to first impeach him and then convict him in the Senate. That's what was going on. This was an establishment witch hunt, and it was definitely political, but it's criminal what they're doing. If Mueller is prudent, he will wrap it up. Ideally, when no one's paying much attention, and that's usually during the holidays, the run-up to Christmas. And maybe that's what's happening. A counter-argument is simply that he's going to let this go on and on and on and on. Well, he'd be making that mistake again, ignoring the American people. The American people don't like this. They don't. And the politicians better wake up to that fact. President Trump got elected. Mueller got appointed. He should have been fired. And if he doesn't wrap it up, and I don't think Trump is going to do that immediately, the wise thing, the prudent thing to do is to close this thing down. We'll see what happens. I don't know what's going to happen. But what I know needs to happen is the appointment of a second special counsel to go after the crimes that were committed in the Department of Justice and in the FBI as part of what I call the Clinton-Obama-Democrat criminal conspiracy. And what I'm referring to is the Obama administration using the government to spy on the American people, and I'm talking Donald Trump and people involved in his campaign. That is a federal crime, whether you know it or not. You're not supposed to use the assets, the people of the United States government to go after your political opposition. That's exactly what President Obama did, and it was a conspiracy. There were communications. I don't have time to get into it. Frankly, I'm bored with it. Part one was to get Hillary Clinton the nomination, which means she had to get out from under the FBI criminal investigation of her mishandling of emails and classified information, as well as the Clinton Foundation pay for play, which is a lot difficult to prove. She was under two FBI investigations. They had tons of evidence regarding the destruction of government records and the mishandling of classified information. She and the people involved in this should have been prosecuted. They were not. The fix was in. And President Obama knew that she had this server because he was sending and receiving communications to her way before it came out in the press. What he should have done is shut it down, but he didn't. And what he should have done is fired Comey the day that he gave his little press conference on 5 July. He didn't. Why didn't he do it? He reconciled to the fact that Hillary Clinton was going to be the Democratic Party candidate and needed to help her get out from under the FBI investigation and then try to find dirt on Donald Trump to have an October surprise. And if that didn't work, frame him. And I've gone over this in many shows. I'm saying this because the American people believe in the rule of law and believe no matter how high ranking you are, including up to and including the president, if you commit a crime in the United States, you should be investigated, and if the evidence warrants, you should be indicted and prosecuted. It's very dangerous for the elites to ignore their own political base, and that's what's going on. Because when you do that, you're facing a rebellion or revolt, and you're just seeing one in living color in France. Thank you for listening, and now, America the Beautiful.
My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. With the voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUX Web Radio. WordPress.com